Welcome to the Deposits Roundtable, and where we are joined by three experts exploring the future of deposit portfolio management. And today's expert panel includes Flow Tracker's President CEO, Dave McNabb. Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks, Mike.
You would be better than great if we could see you, and that's all on me. So, and then we also have CorePoint's founder and CEO, Neil Stanley. Neil, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Mike. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
And then last but not least, we have Cole Analytics' very own CEO, Steve Walford. Steve, how are you, sir?
Very well. Sitting here in the sunshine in Arizona.
And boy, if we could see that, we would be so elated as well. So anyway, so yeah, thank you guys for coming here today. And I appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules. And we also appreciate the participants as well, taking time out of their schedule to join our webinar today. And again, my apologies for the video snafu. We'll get that straightened out hopefully here in the next few minutes. But I want to start out, and this is going to be a round table. Obviously, I'm going to be ping-ponging between each of you gentlemen with the various questions here. And I'm going to start out here since we're a little bit late here because of the video technicalities. Dave, I'm going to start with you. In the current volatile economic environment, what role do you see deposits playing as part of any given credit union's plans to ensure the sustainability and stability of their financial practices? So can you start us off, Dave?
Be delighted to. Thanks, Mike. Everybody's short on deposits right now.
Oh, yeah.
We're in an industry-wide liquidity crisis. We're also in a high-rate environment. Compared to the last 20 years, we're in a high-rate environment. So pretty much everybody is worrying right now about liquidity and cost of funds. So what I see happening is there's other things we've got to think about when we're looking at deposits as well. We should be thinking about the fact that the bank account, if you will, the basic share checking account, is the root of relationships. And we've got to pay a lot of attention to that, because having proper, deep member relationships is still the essence of success for stability and sustainability of any financial institution. The other thing is we've got to remember we're meeting members' needs, and we need to stay focused on our mission statement. The promises that we've made to our members is our brand, and we have to stay brand centric while not giving away the store, obviously, on interest rates, which we're going to talk about lots in this conversation. But it's really essential that retail is where it's at, not government, not wholesale, not business deposits. Those are all quick fixes that are not as sustainable as retail deposit taking. And I've been a bank investor for over 30 years. I do not invest in banks that do not have a strong retail banking base. Deposits are where it's at. It's where all the value is created. So my view on this is that we should remember that these products all serve different needs. There's a difference between what a person takes a checking account for versus a money market versus a CD. They're doing them for different reasons. And that meeting the member's needs is the foundation of a good relationship. So deposits are relationship centric. If we really care about our members, it's job one.
Yep, for sure. And Neil, I'm going to ask same question to you.
Yes, Mike, the key issue here, anytime somebody talks about an insured financial institution, we have to remember what is insured.
Yeah.
The insured part are the deposits. That's what gives financial institutions the opportunity to gather funds at a relatively low cost. Without it, the risk is just so great that you're lending money to a financial institution that's not insured. You have to understand that we have what has turned into kind of a commodity mindset, because everybody thinks that deposits are simple and easy and classic. The reality is there's huge opportunity to have variance. There's huge opportunity to create value for members in that part of the business that has been ignored. As Dave talked about, the last 20 years, we've been flush with deposits. So it is a crucial issue today.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And Steve, again, same question to you, sir.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely critical. And one of the things that we have seen is the fact that a lot of places don't have a good process in place, I call it a strategic pricing framework, because you need to balance the needs of the depositors with the needs of the financial institution, the credit union, and frankly, the needs of the regulators. And so if you can get your pricing correctly, at least boundaries around your pricing, that helps everybody in the entire cycle. You know, for example, you know, people look down the street to price what the next door neighbor is doing. Well, if you think about that, that doesn't make a lot of sense. That person down the street has no idea what it costs you to deliver that product, has no idea of your risk parameters for that product. And surveys have said that 50% of all pricing is done without considering interest rate risk.
Right.
So when you take all three of these things together, I mean, you can do all the analysis you want, but if you don't know what's happening with the customer or the member and what how to present it to them, you're just flying blind.
Yeah, well said, well said. And then, Steve, I'm going to stick with you on the second question here. So what are some of the triggers and barriers for financial institutions, particularly credit unions in this case, to change how they perceive and manage their deposit portfolios?
The oldest and strongest words is, and most expensive words in business is, we've always done it that way. And the hardest thing to do is to change people's mindsets on how we approach this problem. Introducing more advanced analytics, and it doesn't have to be grand and glorious, but you have to understand how your interest rate risk and liquidity risk impact not only the liability sides, but the asset side too. Because in many cases, the problem arises is that people underprice their loans because they fail to integrate interest rate risk into that pricing, which leaves the deposit side starved for money to manipulate, or I hate to use the word manipulate, to adjust interest rates to the market. And so if you get a process in place, we call it a strategic pricing framework, that balances the needs of the assets and the liabilities and includes all risks and all costs. And that's a big key when I say costs, because I'll say most organizations really do not know what it costs to deliver their products. And you can't really manage if you don't know that cost. And that's just the start. Once you know those costs, you have to be able to understand what the people are doing
right
in those accounts.
Indeed, indeed. And Neil, same question to you, sir.
I think, Mike, the key that we see here in terms of dealing with this current environment is that most institutions are stuck with the classic version. You know, we know we're in a regulated industry. We know we're a legacy industry. But what we see across our entire economy is that technology has changed the way people interact. Think about Amazon, Netflix, Uber. All of these things have changed things that we thought were very traditional, very reasonable approaches to certain things. But because of technology, and now because of interest rates, depositors are seeing the world very differently. And yet financial institutions are saying, let's just get back to status quo. I think Steve said it well, that is, in terms of the burden of the status quo. So today, financial institutions, it's time to upgrade your approach. It's time for new thinking on the processes, products, and pricing strategies that are applied. It's time for upgrading the entirety of what we're doing, but not losing the value of the insured deposit base. We have to maintain that confidence and yet provide new, fresh opportunities that depositors say, well, this just makes sense. Why wouldn't we do it this way?
Indeed. And Dave, yeah, same question to you. What are some of the triggers and barriers for financial institutions or credit unions in this case?
First thing I'm going to throw out there is depositors are back. Right? There was a long time when we were thinking that depositors were a dying breed. CDs have been in decline since 2000.
Right.
Okay. And CDs are now what everybody thought it was, a product that had gone out of style. It's not a matter of style. It's a matter of the interest rates have gotten so low that people were indifferent. And we're now back into a world where actually traditional banking a la 1990s, 1980s makes sense. And people need to relearn things. And I think that that's supportive of both what Steve and Neil are saying. The barriers I see to actually getting the job done and getting ourselves enabled here, the biggest one is probably inertia. We're slow to react to the swing. You know, it wasn't until I was talking about this 2 years ago at the NAFQ CFO conference, where I told people there's a wave coming of liquidity. The tide's going to go out. Liquidity is going to be a problem. You're going to get caught offside on loans that are long duration with short funding. And lo and behold, it happened that it took three banks out last year. So once those three banks went down, everybody kind of woke up. So I think awareness is there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
But we also face some other problems. One of them is it's been a long time since deposits were quote unquote in fashion, and we had to manage them actively. And as a consequence of that, there's been atrophy of both skills in the pricing domain, in marketing, and in operations, the actual selling process, member facing. Those skills are rusty. Okay. And now technology's changed as well. And the investments we've made in the past around things like mobile banking, for talking to the checking and transactional type businesses, the investments we've made in lending processing and originations and all the good things we've done around that, including risk management. There's been no investment in deposit space for 20 years. And as a consequence of that, it's very, very outdated capabilities that people have. And I think that's a big deal. And it impairs the ability of the organization to do exactly what the other fellows are saying here. Stop relying on experience. Because unless your experience goes back 30 years, it's wrong. We're in a different environment now, and doing the same old is not going to work. So you need new information. You need new capabilities in terms of understanding analytics and pricing and what behaviors are. And you need new capabilities in order to bring your offers to the members in a way where you're providing them with a value-added service.
Hey, Mike.
Yes,
Steve, I want to just add to what Dave really drove into.
Oh, go for it.
One of the things that we are seeing, and a lot of the mistakes I think people are making, is the assumption that deposits are driven by interest rates. And what we're finding is deposit intermediation within the organization is driven by interest rates, i.e., moved, just what Dave said, moved from non-maturity to CDs. But but the balances within the credit union or between credit unions is not driven by interest rates. It is directly correlated with the money supply, M2. And so most of the liquidity issues that credit unions are facing right now are actually directly associated with quantitative tightening from the Fed. There's just a smaller pool of money available to all financial institutions to fight over. And so those that are really struggling trying to grow right now, it's in a very expensive time to try to do that.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. And Steve, I think we can try our video now.
Yeah.
You were talking, and so we want to see your smiling face. There we are. We're here. Oh my gosh. Isn't this wonderful? It's like the sun rising over the mountaintops.
Well, at least with Neil.
I'm always happier when I can see my friends. This is great.
now we're smiles. All right, guys. I apologize for the video stuff. All on me. Let's go to the third question here now. Let's take the example of loans. To increase assets in their portfolio, financial institutions often became very aggressive with pricing, and unfortunately, even lending standards. So wouldn't a credit union need to become very aggressive with their pricing to attract or retain deposits? And that's it? Steve, I'm going to let you go first since you were the tail end of that last one.
No. What's happening right now is the lending side of the organization, and it's not related to credit unions. And a lot of people are not going to like to hear that, but it generates very little value for the organization. Mm-hmm. We've proven that time and time again. And why it's generated very little value is when people have priced their loans, they've looked up and down the street, and they said, okay, we're going to meet the market. But as I'll reiterate, that person down the street doesn't know what it costs you to deliver. It doesn't know your risks. And so we've done surveys that have said that 50% of community financial institutions do not price interest rate risk into their loans.
Okay.
Now, what that does is it starves your deposits of fuel to be able to change your prices and manipulate, or to manage your pricing on the other side. And that's all we call a strategic pricing framework. But if you don't price in on the loan side, I mean, the auto loan market pricing has just been a disaster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is call your local broker and say, what would you buy my auto loans for? You're not going to sell it to them, but just find out. You're going to find out that they're not only going to give you 95 cents in the dollar. And if you translate that into yield, that's about 50 basis points under what they would give. That's a real problem, and it shows up in liquidity.
No doubt. And Neil, I'm going to come to you on the same question as well, sir.
Yeah, I think when we talk about aggressive pricing, it's so interesting that we lived with a cost of funds that was equal to Fed funds for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Fed funds are paying 5.5%, and our cost of funds is much, much lower than that. And yet we talk about aggressive pricing. So that lag that's occurred, it's almost like we're thinking somehow we're due something as an industry that isn't really mechanically expected. So aggressive, if you're 200 basis points below Fed funds, is that aggressive at 350? You know, I just looked at bank cost of funds for the fourth quarter. It is up, but it's the total cost of funds for the banking industry, 2.4% on interest-bearing funds. If Fed funds are paying 5.5% and you're bringing in funds at 240, that's a pretty sweet spread for a riskless investment.
Yeah.
So I do understand the motion, the movement, the direction. It seems like, oh, it's getting more expensive. Well, relative to history, not relative to the market, it's not expensive. It's not aggressive. The issue is, how do you straddle that? How do we keep our costs appropriate for the audience that's not price sensitive, and yet appropriate for the audience that is price sensitive? And that's the art of this. And credit unions need to understand that the mass market product push and order taking posture does not work in an environment where there's that much spread between Fed funds and cost of funds.
Yeah, I've heard that as well, for sure. And Steve, I'm gonna let you wrap up this question. Dave, I'm sorry. Dave, I'll let you wrap up this question. You can start, you can go again, Steve, if you want.
Very democratic of you, Mike. I think Neil's point there is absolutely critical. The notion that our cost of funds is actually high is fiction. In reality, traditionally, the net interest margins you'd make on deposit monies, at least CD money, let's take that as an example, 100 basis points, kind of normal, 150 basis points, rich. If you're making 200 on your CDs, it's a bargain. Okay. And people need to know what the old benchmarks are in this industry to understand that, you know, it's not about the absolute level of interest rates. We make our margin on the spread between what we're borrowing and lending at.
Yeah.
And those two things have to slide up and down along the maturity curve at the same rate, or else we get caught in rate traps. Okay. Now, it's always the case that deposits lag. And right now, there's more going on than that, because, in fact, I believe that the entire deposits industry or world is in disarray. Okay. So the disarray that I'm talking about here is there are brokers with liquidity problems out there. Mm-hmm. There are regional banks out there with major, major margin pressure problems. The big banks don't need deposits. They're all still flush. Okay. They're offering a quarter, like 25 basis points on a money market account in some cases. But that, I know clients who are working in much hundreds of basis points higher than that. So the market, you need to, when you're looking at this stuff, understand your own situation. Okay. What is our asset and liability management situation? What is our cost of funds? What is the value of funds that we're getting off our loan portfolio? What is, you know, what are the margins we're working with? What is the competitive environment of our local market area?
Yeah.
National averages are one thing. Local market area can be very, very different. And going beyond that too, when I look at a credit union, typically the history of the credit union was oriented towards an employer group of some kind or an interest group of some kind. And those groups still have DNA in the organization. For example, we got a couple of clients that are Air Force bases, for example, right? They're credit unions for Air Force bases. Well, the people don't look like the demography of their towns. They are special. You know, those are really high income people to begin with, right? Pilots and all that good stuff. So knowing what your people, your business looks like, understanding how your business is behaving, what are your members doing? What are your members' needs? And remembering, and when we're talking about pricing competitively, it's not giving away the store. We're here to meet the depositor's needs. This is critical, foundational, long-term relationship stuff. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that most of the deposit money you have on the books is from older clients who have been with you for a very long time. It's deep, deep relationship trust stuff, okay? And so it's fundamental to your relationships. It's also really important that we're presenting needs-based solutions to our members so that we're talking to them about what is it you really want here, because they've got to figure out how to trade off liquidity and accessibility options and term commitments as well, to spin on liquidity, but cashability versus non is what I'm thinking there, and be able to understand what is it, you know, if you're saving for your kids' college or something like that, that's a different time frame than it is if you're doing a vacation. Yep. So we got to be sensitive to that kind of stuff. And that talks into something that's really vital to understand in consumer behavior, which is every human being has a personal financial life cycle every year. Okay. If you work for a company, bonus time is bonus time. And lo and behold, tax time is tax time.
Oh, yeah.
And car time is car time. And housing time is housing time. And everybody's personal life cycles actually go through. They have their own dates and they're not all the same.
Yeah.
So interestingly, you can get from a behavioral perspective into a situation where you can say, well, you know what? If I wanted to identify the best prospects for bringing me deposit money next, I don't have to look any further than who brought me deposit money last year, last month. Okay. Or next month, rather.
Yeah.
In the branches, we did that with one credit union and they went from 1.1 to $1.3 billion in deposits in 6 weeks.
Wow.
Okay. So there's gold in them, the bills. And you do need to understand behavior. That's looking at demand signals, understanding that these people are human beings and that we're here to meet their needs at the time they need with the service they need. And I think what you'll find is between the three of us, all of us are talking about pieces of a puzzle that needs to be assembled in order to provide a true solution for achieving real success in this market.
And those behaviors, Dave, aren't they hidden in the data that much of?
Yeah, well, one of the things we do, speaking for my company here, is we track flows of money. So new money, pure money to the organization, lost money, truly lost to the organization, and money switching in between products and services. There is about 30% of all account growth that's observed in credit unions and banks, actually, is on the deposit side of the house. 30% of it is just money that's moving from one pocket to another pocket.
Yeah.
For the same, so it's literally Dave took money out of left and put it into right. And that's a huge distortion in terms of understanding sales performance, understanding, you know, retention, understanding product cannibalization and the cost of cannibalization as you move money from one product, which has a different margin than another product. So getting all that stuff right takes a lot of information, and the information is doable today. It wasn't 15 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, gentlemen, last question kind of in the group section here. And Neil, I'm going to let you go first on this one. Some credit unions will say, we have plenty of deposits. Deposits are not an issue for us. We're doing all right now. And we're, you know, doing what we've always done in the past. So thank you very much type of attitude. So what do you say to these folks that are thinking that, hey, you know what? We're all right here.
Yeah. So we're in a business where we are bringing in funding and then we are distributing that fund to borrowers. And if you have an excess of deposits, great. You can go out and get more borrowers.
Yeah.
You've got more opportunities. So there's always a flux. There's always a dynamic to this. And it is a success story when you have a surplus of deposits. It gives you the ability to go do more things, to serve more people, to grow your business by serving and creating a greater impact.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to be mindful of where things are headed. And if, in fact, there's this notion that somehow or another you're going to opt out of the competitiveness of deposits as the world opens its eyes to what is available to them, as consumers say, oh, I can go to public.com. I can go to maxmyinterest.com. Mm-hmm. Those are two websites that I am shocked that financial institutions, in many cases, have never heard of. And yet they're out there for the consumer to say, you know what? I don't have to change my credit union account. I don't have to change my checks. I don't have to change my debit card. I don't have to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
I keep my account right here at the credit union. But I'm going to keep the balances over here where I get paid 5.5%.
Right, right.
Public.com takes funds and invests it in U.S. treasuries. So you don't actually have to go out and buy the treasury. But yet you can get the impact of yields in the marketplace, and you don't have to move your accounts from the credit union. It's so interesting how this competition is coming in. And so to answer your question a little more succinctly, I think about when I was a young person and people sold encyclopedias.
Oh, yes.
And some people said, I love my job selling encyclopedias. Well, good, as long as it lasts.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Good point. I like that analogy. So, and Steve, same question to you, sir. For Cretans out there, think, hey, you know what? We're doing okay here. Thank you very much.
Well, that's always an interesting question. Doing okay is a relative term,
right?
And so, you know, the way I like to think about deposits is they're the raw materials for creating your assets.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you say to yourself that we've got enough, what you're really saying to me is, well, we don't really want to make any more loans. We really don't want to grow. And like it or not, most compensation of executives in a credit union is tied to the size of the credit union. And, you know, it's just a simple fact.
Yeah.
And so if you're happy where you're at, you know, I'm not going to argue with you. But I don't think that's where most people land.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And Dave, same question to you, sir. For Creighton's, hey, we're doing okay. What do you say to those?
Maybe
things?
Right now. Yeah. the winds of change are upon us. And
we were saying that 2 years ago, weren't we? Yeah, we were doing okay in deposits.
Well, we used to look at the loan to share ratios in the credit union industry and publish it off the call reports, doing it on a comparative basis. And we started ringing the bell when, you know, before COVID hit, we were up around 5% loan to share ratio in the industry. And the norm was about 15, well, it wasn't that many points, it was 10 points below that, I think. But anyway, then the government in its largesse put $3 trillion worth of liquidity in the people's pockets.
Yep.
And it showed up as a spike. You can see it on the money supply, to Steve's point. And then now that's drying up. Well, what a surprise that is. So everything old is new again. My sense is if you are in that luxurious state where you have a surplus of deposits, yes, you can get some serious market share. Yes, you're in a great position to be an acquirer now of other institutions. Some regionals are pretty good price right now. Is something to think about, as well as, though, I still wouldn't say, therefore, I don't need the capabilities these guys are talking about, because sooner or later, well, there's two things. Sooner or later, you're going to need it. And the second part is, if you want to be maximizing the value of your portfolio and being a responsible manager, you really need to know what the heck is going on. So you need to start measuring this stuff. You need to start managing this stuff. And you need to be cognizant of pricing, promotion, performance, delivery, all of those aspects of the game that are crucial to success.
Well said.
If I can add one other thing onto what Dave said, he hit on some really critical points. People bringing in deposits for a long time, they keep focusing on loans and the spread between loans and deposits.
Mm-hmm.
We have clients that are 50% share to deposit ratio and are killing it. And the reason is they realize how poorly, for instance, the auto market is, and that they, even though it's not the, you know, serving the member, they're still serving the member depositor, but they can take and put these in bonds and do better than a mortgage or an auto loan. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a simple financial calculation to do, but unless you include all the risks and all the costs and evaluate them on a bottom line ROA basis, who cares about rate as long as your ROA hits the targets that you need to maintain your membership and maintain your capital and all of that, you're fine. You can, that gives both sides, the asset side and liability side, the ability to play around the edges, but never cross the line between overpricing your deposits and underpricing your loans, keep that margin constant, and it goes. And I'm going to really quickly point out, just last week, there was an article in the CU Times about four credit unions that are in trouble. Okay, and I won't name them, but we all had this conversation. And if you, I don't know if I'll bring Auditor Dave in here to explain what happened on some of the credit side, but when you look at just their margins, they were abominable. Although the article focused on credit, the net interest margins crushed. And what was happening compared to what they should have been doing is they should have been pricing in anticipation of interest rates rising. They didn't. Mm. And so now their loans are underpriced. As their deposit prices come up, their net interest margin is getting killed. And on contrast, we have clients that are doing just the opposite. They're just loving this.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. Yeah, that's good. And I think the big lesson that we've learned over the last few years is that how times can change super quickly. If you're, hey, we're doing okay now, but who knows what's going to happen 365 days from now? You know, I think we learned a huge lesson over the last few years in that for sure. So, all right, we're coming to the section where we have kind of individual questions here for each of our panelists, but you guys are feel free to chime in as well. And Steve, since you were taking the last one, I'm going to stick with you on this one. So I've seen that you recommend having standard promotional negotiated and retention offers. What do you say to someone who says we want everyone to get our best offers?
Actually, I'm going to pass that off to Neil.
Okay, Neil.
He's the real expert here. This is not my world.
So you're setting a high bar for me there, Steve. I gotta live up to that. So these four categories are essential in meeting the expectations. Reality is that we have for so long said, hey, you know, we've got enough deposits. We don't really need to cater to everyone. And also, there's this sense of we want to give everyone our very best. Well, that is literally impossible to give everyone your very best, because everyone, as we just talked about, includes your borrowers as well as your depositors. And if you give your depositor with the very best offer that you could possibly give them, the only way you can make that up is if you charge more to the borrowers. So this notion of I'm going to give everyone the same and I'm going to give everyone this offer that is publicly disclosed, that's why you do have standard offers, you do have promotional offers, you do need negotiated offers, and you need retention strategies. And that allows you to meet three categories of depositors. There's always three in every environment. You have the content, sometimes we call them sleepers. Then you have the curious. They have legitimate questions like, should I be doing something different with my money? Then, of course, you have the shoppers. And the shoppers make they consider it more than a hobby to go out and press the credit union for, why can't I get the Edward Jones rate, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's going on. And so you have these three categories of people. You need four categories of offers. Your standard rates, they're great for the sleepers. And if you don't have a different price for the curious and the shoppers, you're going to overprice everything.
Yep.
You're going to then push that cost to the borrowers. So you need a negotiated offer. And it can't just be ad hoc. Oh, I don't know. What do we do today for this person? It has to be systematized. That's where Steve's process of understanding
the pricing structures make so much sense, because we have to have differentiated pricing. And then, of course, we have to find out where's the money going. And that's where Flow Tracker is so essential, because you can't respond to everyone with the highest rates, but you can respond to the right situations where it's really going to be old money pretty quickly. So turn it into new money. Keep it as new money. You can price new money differently than you price old money. And so all of these things might add up to this. You need a standard price for the sleepers. You need promotional price to get the attention of people who are curious. Hey, what can we do? And then your frontline needs to be in a position where they can negotiate with the shopper and not negotiate passively as, oh, we'll match. Matching is a terrible idea. Matching is very destructive. But you do need a, I can sweeten the pot offer. I could do this for you if you'll do this for me.
Yeah.
That's where the frontline becomes much more professional, much more credible. But the retention offers are situational. There are situations that have been around for decades where you can actually take money that's on its way out the door, keep it, have happy depositors, have a member that goes, wow, you guys, this is the credit union for me because you guys know how to take care of me. Meanwhile, the sleeper, the person who was not uncomfortable, they don't need to get paid the exact same rate as everybody else. And people sometimes will push back again and say, whoa, we need to give everybody the same thing. There is no industry. You go to airfare, hotels. I guarantee you the people who stayed in the hotel last night, they didn't all pay the same rate on that hotel room.
That is true.
They all maybe look the same, but they aren't paying the same price.
Yep.
Price differentiation is real, and it must be embraced by our industry.
Yeah, well said.
And I went too long. I want to give my colleagues more time.
You're all good, Neil. And then now, Steve, now I'm coming to you. Okay, sorry for the mix-up there. So what key practices should credit unions use to align their current pricing strategy with NCOA's expectations, particularly regarding risk assessment?
Yeah, actually just had this conversation with the regulators in December. One of the things that they really like, and if you've never heard of it, it's called a risk-adjusted return on assets. For a bank, it'd be risk-adjusted return on capital.
Okay.
But for a credit union, we're not that concerned as a leveraging capital as a bank is. So having that, and what that means is that this is an old thing. What it means is you incorporate all your risks and all your costs in your pricing framework. We call it a strategic pricing framework. And so what that does is keeps the guardrails around both the assets, so you don't underprice your assets,
mm-hmm.
and your liabilities, so you can not overprice your liabilities to maintain a risk-adjusted return on assets, a spread between the two.
Right.
Now, if I would play this to those credit unions that were in there, you could tell they didn't do that. It was plain as day because they underpriced their assets, their cost of deposits raced up and crushed their net interest margins, and bad news for them, unless some miracle happens and they actually lower interest rates, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, yeah.
So a risk-adjusted return on assets framework. Now, this is nothing new. It was first introduced in the, Neil and Dave, late 80s, early 90s? We're just relearning it. And that's what we're talking about, going back and figuring out, hey, some of the stuff we used to do, we need to do again.
Everything old is new again. I like that. I like that, Steve. And Dave, last question for you here on the individual questions. Tell us about active deposit management as a policy or a practice. How do you see it, and how can credit unions adopt it?
Okay. I'm kind of a frameworky guy, so with a consulting background. So folks have to forgive me what sounds so terribly theoretical and really isn't. What we've done is, it's actually on the front page of our website, FlowTrackerAnalytics.com. There's a graphic that says active deposit management. It's got a circle on it. It starts off with And what it's supposed to be is a way doing business in the, it's how deposit business should work. Okay. And the purpose of us publishing this and promoting this is we're trying to help people shift their strategy from being passive order takers, matching rates, all that kind of stuff, to actively managing your portfolio, because the amount of money involved in this for everybody in terms of profitability, I know that can be a dirty word in credit unions, but nonetheless, it is also about stability, and it's also about about regulatory compliance. It's all about the quality of the work that you're able to do, as well as the value you're creating for your members. So moving from a passive strategy to an active strategy can have a huge impact. I think each one of us around the table here would probably say we could add 15, 20 basis points each to a portfolio. Well, that's 60 basis points in one round table. That's a lot of money. So at the end of the day, getting this right is mission critical. So active deposit management, what it consists of is a set of capabilities that you need in order to fulfill the mission of managing a portfolio properly. And that's understanding the demand signals that are in your portfolio. We talked about what our members are actually doing. Okay. And to Neil's point about the idea that there are very different behaviors here, folks. Like if folks don't know that or not, IRA money is incredibly sleepy, for example, just throwing one out. And that's a no-brainer. You'd be nuts to price that the same as your other ones. Anyway, sorry to anybody who does, by the way. So the other capabilities that you need is pricing discipline. And I think Steve is talking to that in a big way with the strategic pricing framework. Another thing that's important is targeting your promotions in such a manner that you're not just going to draw in hot money, that you're also managing the cannibalization across your product and services. So that's both balancing the rates that you're offering across your products and services, as well as choosing who you're going to be promoting to. There's no point in actively going out and trying to cannibalize all the money out of your money market. Some of it's going to move that way, but it's not all the same.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are people who will stay with your money market no matter what happens to CD prices. So you got to know what your members are doing, and that's all around behavior. Okay. So it helps you shape and target your marketing and promotion exercises. Okay. That you're going to do. And then not least, you actually have to get your sales process right as an advisory process where you're value-added consulting to your members. Oh,
completely.
Because that's what we're there for in the first place, is to improve people's financial lives. I think, look at any credit unions, and something like that is in the mission statement, right? So we're fulfilling our mission by adding value in the conversation about what kind of products and services will best meet your needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of getting that conversation right is very much where Neil's playing, right? And then being able to come back from that consultative sales dialogue and find out what's working, what's not working, what can we do better? So you have a continuous learning loop. Those different pieces added together, it may sound like a lot of words, but that's what we call active deposit management.
Gotcha.
And I make it simple for people so they can really sort of, I get that. Think about bowling. You may not know this or not, but 19% of Americans bowled in 2023. So I'm hoping most people can follow a bowling analogy. I looked it up, okay? I knew it was a popular game, but I didn't know that was that popular.
That's pretty popular.
That's actually playing the game. So if you bowl, you're in good company. So think about what you have to do to be a successful bowler, okay? You need to know where the lane is. Well, that's a good start. Hopefully you don't have too many cocktails at the bar. We'll leave that part out of it. You should know where the gutters are. So you got to know where the lane is, the happy path. You got to know where the gutters are. Okay. Well, Steve's helping you with that. Follow? Okay. You also got to look down there and see where the pins are, because it's not always the same pins every time. Okay. We can help with that. Getting your target marketing, figuring out where you want to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Kind of important.
Yep.
Next thing is you actually have to be able to roll a bowling ball down the lane. Okay. Now, if that isn't delivery of service, I don't know what is. So that's the way I see that one. And then the other last thing that you do typically in a bowling thing is you want to keep score and reset the pins. And that's, again, a measurement thing, which is something that is in our domain. So between the three of us, this is why we're talking to folks today as a team, as a group. because we're all CEOs of different companies bringing different solutions to the industry to help them do better in this space and improve their management capabilities. That's what we're all about. And each one of us has a role to play in supporting that.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. I love the bowl analogy. It really paints a clear picture there for sure, Dave. And as you guys are talking,
was that a strike? Yeah.
I think you nailed it. Yeah, I think you nailed it for sure, right down the middle. And also, I think what you guys are, as you guys are talking, I'm thinking about what you guys are talking about. These are such great opportunities to deepen that member relationship, especially on the deposit side. I mean, this is just yet another opportunity to really deepen that relationship and strengthen that bond for sure, which Creighton is always looking for, especially what you were talking about, Dave, that relationship type of aspect of it, where you're kind of a consultant almost, you know, where you're that bowling coach, if you will, you know, you're sharing with them where they should throw the ball and all that type of stuff, or roll the ball rather. So yeah, you want to.
Neil's got some awesome capabilities in terms of structuring the sales dialogue that people need to know about.
Yeah.
So if it's new to you folks, look it up.
Yeah.
And to your point too, one of the key things that we find is a lot of financial institutions will say it's all about the demographics. And the reality is when you start watching people's behavior, demographics doesn't explain it. The same people who at sometimes are simply very content, they can become curious and they can become shoppers.
Yeah,
and you cannot predefine that. That's why the industry needs to upgrade the professionalism of the engagement. That means people need to be trained. They need to understand how the value, like you said, we're helping people manage their financial lives. You have to have the front line be engaging. They need to be curious people. They need to be competent and they need to be confident. And if they're product pushers and order takers with some sort of rate sheet out there, it's impossible for them to accomplish that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that exact same thing as well too. Yeah. Thank you for that, Neil. Thanks for reiterating that. So guys, we're coming up, but we got about 5 minutes or so left. I just have one last kind of follow-up question. I mean, any thoughts or any closing thoughts as we kind of wrap this up here? Is there something that we didn't cover today that the audience should hear about? Dave, it looks like you have something to say.
I just want to throw something out and maybe all three of us can weigh in on this.
Sure.
Chief Deposit Officer. It's a happening thing in banks.
Oh, look at you. Yeah.
And I'm not seeing it quite as robustly happening yet in the credit union industry, which is not too surprising. Banks can sometimes be a little less risk averse. But the Chief Deposit Officer is a role that we see emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's high time. If you have a Chief Lending Officer, it's pretty obvious you need
one. Why not? Yeah.
It's balancing out the institution so that you're actually thinking about members in the right way as well from a relationship perspective. So from my perspective, I am pro CDO and think that it's a good initiative for anybody to undertake. I'm anxious to see what the other fellows think.
Yeah. Steve, you almost fell out of your chair when Dave said Chief Deposit Officer. What's your take?
Take that idea, Steve.
Yes. And here's why. We do, you know, value analytics, profitability analytics for the loans and deposits, so on and so forth. And we have proven time and time again that deposits generate more value than loans. And they are, in ways, more difficult to analyze than loans are. And so when you're sitting there looking at an organization that's making 10 basis points on their loans and 180 basis points on their deposits, it's kind of a no-brainer.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah,
it really is. And, you know, but you do not know that unless you have a framework to evaluate it.
Mm-hmm.
I always love the saying, a genius is one who can see the obvious. And once you see it, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the light bulb goes
on.
Jamie
Dimon's line about that, if I could just jump in.
Yeah.
He said banking's he said this at least 2 decades ago. The banking is a funny business where your assets are your liabilities and your liabilities are your assets. And he was a guy who bought a lot of banks. And I've been in the business of selling a couple of them. And when you're doing M&A, you're not selling the loan portfolio, guys.
You are not
dragging your value down.
Yeah.
The value of your business in banking, where we do see more commercial transactions, obviously, it's obvious you're selling the deposit base.
Yeah.
And it's true for credit unions too, that's where the capital, that's where the real wealth is in the institution.
Yeah, just take your loans and go to your local broker and say, what would you give them for me?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are they going to tell them?
Well, car loans in particular, like, why did GMAC go out of that business?
Right.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Neil, did you have any comments on Dave's chief deposit officer?
I can tell you that occasionally I have been invited by some of the contacts I have to present to different groups. And one group that I remember distinctly was a group of chief deposit officers. They were in financial institutions of fairly significant size, but not huge. And the accountability that they were bringing to their institution, the ideas, the innovation, you could tell that it was these were not just titles. They were roles that had been assigned by the board and the management team to really empower these people, give them authority and responsibility. And they're making a difference in their organizations because of that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, gentlemen. Gosh, we are running a little bit low on time here, but there was one statement that you said at the very beginning, Dave, that really caught my ear. And I'm going to totally paraphrase, but you said deposits are coming back. Or, I mean, because I want to kind of end this on a optimistic note, on a positive note, because we've been in this deposit kind of quandary the last year and 18 months or so, or liquidity. So can you share with me?
I would love to say that scarcity is going to stop, but it's not. Okay. Sadly, if I gave that impression, that is not what I intended to communicate. I think we're in a liquidity bind right now that's going to get worse, actually.
Okay.
So the good news is the retail depositor as a persona is back. You know, older people who have relied on CDs as a source of, I'm never going to lose my capital. I'm going to get my income out of it on a regular basis, and I'm going to live in Florida or whatever you choose to do, right? Living off my investments without loss of loss. They're back. And the industry as a whole was very much at losing these people to brokers. So like serious news that retail deposits is back. It happens to be competitive. There happens to be scarcity. But the actual business of deposits is now back in focus. And the people are there for us to market, sell to, and service properly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think as the year goes on, it's going to get more optimistic. Right now, it's still scarcity, but I think as
you can win this Q4, war, you can win this war. You need the tools and the people to do it. Neil,
for sure, sorry. For sure. Neil.
So I'm sure you've heard the phrase "necessity is the mother of invention."
Oh yeah, I live it every day.
And what we've had is we've had this tranquil world where there's no reason to spend time and energy on a topic that's just off the radar. But what you're going to find is that there are products out there available to the audience to create a durable competitive advantage right now. And all you have to do is take some variation of the classic checking, savings, and CDs, recombine them, and give the depositor a combination of yield and liquidity in the right time, in the right way, and all of a sudden things make sense. For example, give you one quick example. We call them redeemable certificates. What do you mean redeemable? Well, every credit union you know is saying, oh, there's a penalty for early withdrawal. Why? Tell me why.
Yeah.
If it doesn't damage the credit union for the withdrawal, why do we charge it? And I can tell you the answer is legacy. We created the certificate back in the 60s, and we said, I don't know, why don't we charge a 6-month penalty for early withdrawal? Somebody picked a number out of the air, and they applied it in that disclosure, and all the depositors are supposed to say, okay.
Wow.
That's going to change, folks.
Yeah.
That's going to change. The idea that randomness is going to create account structures, and it's going to continue, is going to change, because just like Uber and Amazon changed the way we did things because new technologies, new opportunities were available.
Mm-hmm.
The financial institutions are going to go through that as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's exciting. I am not at the first stage of my career, Mike. I know it looks like I'm really young, guys. I'm
fresh out of college, Neil.
Oh, yeah, right. There you go. I love you. But the reality is, sometimes people ask me about retirement. This is the last thing I want to do is retire, because this is the most exciting time
no doubt
in our industry in my career since 1984.
And so I'm excited about what's going to happen because we're going to serve more people better than we've ever served them before.
Yeah.
That's exciting to me.
And there's quite a revolution and an evolution on the horizon for sure. Steve, I'm going to let you have the last word. You've been sitting there very patiently, sir. Any final thoughts on this one before we let the rest of the audience get back to work?
No, it's been really a fun to work with these guys. And when we finally realized that we all had a piece of the puzzle, but nobody had the entire viewpoint of it, it really hit us all. It's just been really an eye opener for me to get deeper into each one of these pieces. I didn't know what Neil knew in these spaces, you know. And then I'm the guy with a master's degree in quantitative analytics, you know. I don't do people.
You do analytics, and you do it well.
But you know, it is. It's just when you start putting this together, as I presented this to other people, the most common response I've been getting is, "Well, that just kind of makes sense." It's not rocket science we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just thinking about things a little different.
Yep. Agreed. Agreed. Well said. That's a great message to end on, guys. Thank you so much for your expertise today and your insights. Always valued, and we couldn't appreciate it more. And thank you to everyone who attended today's webinar. We appreciate you carving out a few minutes of your day to glean from these guys who have a wealth of experience there, and they're out there for you. So, and if you guys missed any part of the webinar, or you know somebody who couldn't make it, we will have a recording ready for you guys later today, and we'll send that over to you guys. But let us know if you have any questions or anything like that. And go visit these guys' websites. They do tremendous jobs out there for credit unions out there on a daily basis, especially in today's unknown world of deposits and liquidity, all that type of stuff. So these guys, again, are a wealth of information. And lastly, not least, but thank you so much for attending today. And keep up the good work into your respective shops. Well done. Good job, guys.